Welcome to the Veteran Experience with author, veteran, and judge Mark Johnson. On this show, we've created a place where veterans can heal and be heard. We tell stories of heroism, of struggle, of the endless battle to preserve American liberty. And we discuss the toll this takes on our best and brightest. We've got somebody here today, Greg Coker, who you all know from two other shows. Greg and I today went out to Desert Hot Springs. We spoke at the post out there, Jeff Cole's post, and we talked about what 9/11 meant to us. We were the two guest speakers, and we spoke one after another, and I was real proud to be up on that stage in front of all these great veterans.
Yes.
Greg Coker, hearing his story, and we were driving back together, and Greg suggested perhaps we had to have a little tribute, and I was so impressed with his words that I thought we ought to bring him here. So, Greg is a retired Army Command Sergeant Major, Chief Executive Officer of the Reaching New Heights Foundation, and also head mentor for the Riverside County Veterans Treatment Court. So, Greg, how are you doing?
Yes, I'm doing fantastic. Today is a great day. We had a great morning experience, and I'm just excited to be here.
Great. Hey, tell us, give us the quick little overview, Reaching New Heights Foundation.
Hey, absolutely. Another great organization and great thing that I'm really proud of is Reaching New Heights Foundation. Reaching New Heights Foundation was formed in 2014 to help veterans in transition. What's a veteran in transition? It's a veteran who may be suffering from the invisible wounds of war and is really not connected with his full potential, is really not back in the community where he should be or could be. And so we help them in transition, whether it be in housing, resources, and jobs and education. And so we've been doing that with partners, with board members such as yourself.
I'm proud to say I'm on the board of directors.
well, thank you for doing that. And so we help veterans in that regard. That's kind of the quick, we operate in Riverside County in San Bernardino. That's kind of a quick, short excerpt on Reaching New Heights Foundation.
Now, you wear another hat. That is the chief mentor of Riverside and San Bernardino Veterans Treatment Courts. What does that involve as a chief mentor?
Well, that's a position that is labeled to really manage other mentors, and what that is like the mentor coordinator, and we support the mentors that actually support veterans themselves, and in that role, I am actively engaged in recruiting mentors to come into our court with a year. Potential support veterans to support other veterans who have a success story, of veterans who have been successful in their own lives and want to give back. So as a chief mentor and mentor coordinator, my job is to get other mentors or look to get other mentors to help the individuals in our court.
It was interesting because Jeff Cole is the commander of the Desert Hot Springs VFW we were at, and Jeff is a graduate of our court. I was talking to him on the phone the other day, and he said that one of the things that actually keeps his sobriety is the fact that he's so involved out there at the VFW out in Desert Hot Springs. It was funny. My first comment was that I was glad to finally get out there because I was wondering if these people did anything other than eat out there, because I get a great-looking menu every day from that VFW, but It was just really good to be out there. I think you're going to agree. It's really just great patriotic Americans. That's what I like about it.
Absolutely. And I think to the first point about staying active and engaged, that post out there at Desert Hot Springs is very active. And that's the kinds of things that help veterans to be successful, is really filling their time with activities that are positive, activities that support others, and activities that give back. And so him being a graduate and understanding that once you graduate, that's really when the journey begins, is what are you going to do after you graduated an 18-month program?
Okay, Greg, well, let's talk about, it's September 11th, 2022, so that makes it 21 years since that day. Do you remember that day?
Wow, do I remember that day? And that was one of the things that we got a chance to speak to, or I got a chance to speak to the folks out there at the VFW. But absolutely, I remember that day every year. I remember that day often. I remember on 9/11 where I was, what I was doing specifically at that time. I absolutely do.
Let's hear about it.
Well, I remember I was taking my youngest daughter, and she would have had to be about 3 or 4 to daycare. I remember having her in my arms and walking into the daycare facility, and they had a big screen TV on. And on the big screen TV, there was the first plane had flew into one of the Twin Towers. And so I stopped and I looked, and I couldn't tell if that was a Hollywood production. I froze in taking her in, and then really didn't know what to think.
How old were you then?
Wow. So that had to
be. And how old was she?
She was, had to be about 3.
Yeah.
A little bit younger than 3. A real pivotal point in her life and growing up. And 20 years ago, 20 plus years ago, that would have made me, wow, in my 30s or so.
Okay.
30s? Wow.
You were in the Army Reserve.
Yeah, I was in the Army. Absolutely. In the Army Reserve. Mm-hmm.
Okay. And. So go on.
Okay. And so at that time, I stopped. I seen the first plane fly in, and it's like the earth stood still. It was just because we just didn't know what was going on. You know, you get to some kind of moments where time just stands still. And then I seen the second one fly in. So at that time, I set my daughter down. I was just looking at, and I said, this is not a drill. I said, this is not a huge Hollywood production. I became numb and just really not really understanding what to think or where to think. And so at that time, things that went through my mind was that we're going to war. We're going to war. That's what my thought was. That's what my thought was. And then right after that, I immediately called my wife. I said, honey, we're going to war. And that was one of my immediate responses was that, that's what I was thinking.
Let's go in your life in those years after. I know you deployed twice to Iraq. You've given an awful lot. Like how many years of active duty time did you actually spend?
I spent
after 9/11.
Oh, after 9/11, that really changed my life, because after 9/11, I spent, I want to say, 5 years on active duty.
Yeah, that's typical. You know, these people who say that the reserves aren't given a lot. Oh,
yeah.
And you had already been in how many years?
Yeah, I had already been in 3 years.
Okay.
Yeah. So
3 years active. And then,
yeah.
What was your rank then?
I think I came out as a sergeant or something like that. I had, or E4, somewhere around there. I had,
okay.
But I moved pretty fast because I had, when I went in, I had college already.
You must have,
I had a degree.
Okay. How would you say that your life changed after that day?
Well, I think everyone's life changed. I think one of the things that I mentioned was that security has changed. Traveling has changed. Our just kind of our way of life had changed to some folks that I would say are under 30. It was the way that they were brought up. But for me, it changed. I became on active duty. I end up leaving my family, actually, and deploying or going on active duty, 800, 900 miles away at Fort Bliss. So not only was the tour time taken away from my family, but the time that I spent afterwards away was really really kind of critical times. But
your children were small.
Yes, my oldest right now is about 20. I want to say 26 or 27, and then my youngest is 23, and so they were really really small. So adding to the time that I was away in Iraq, you know, their high school time, their some of their college time.
Now you, at some point, I bet, sat down with your daughters and said, "I'm going to go to war." Tell us about that conversation. How did you do it?
It was pretty tough, because at that time the news had inundated of all the terrorists, and people were really in an uncertain mode. And then there was a lot of turmoil about WMDs, and it was just a lot of uncertainty. But what I did tell them is that Daddy will be going away, and that he loved them very much. And it was really, you know, it's an emotional time period, because when you left, you really didn't know. Did not know if you're coming back. I mean, that was the first time out of all my time that I had ever, you know, been in war. And so, you know, you don't talk about potentially not coming back, but you talk about that this is serious and Daddy loves you. And so the biggest piece is that I wanted them to know I loved them.
Well, that's beautiful. You spent two deployments in Iraq.
Yes, yes, yes. It was a continuous deployment. We were 13 months, and the Army equates deployments a 6 months duration time period, where I was OEF, which they had to write another law, another bill that that it turned to OEF. So we were anticipating doing one tour and coming back, but we didn't know. And so I had the opportunity to come home, but I didn't. I ended up staying, because I just thought it would be too hard to come home.
Oh, and to...
Yeah, and then
uproot,
come back,
everything, and then have
back
to leave.
Yes.
Yeah, so. I agree with you, because I spent a solid year.
Yeah.
And overall, about 18 months if you took the time at the unit. So I was at the unit for months. I even took an Arabic class.
Okay.
Because I learned one thing. I have little, if any, aptitude for speaking Arabic, but... I took an Arabic class that the Army paid for. That was 2 months, and I learned some things. But any positives? I know this sounds like an odd question. Anything positive come out in your life as a result of 9/11?
I think that I had a greater kind of value of my family, a greater value. Not that I didn't have a value, but when you're at places where you may not come home, you didn't know. So you just valued, and you think you maybe even appreciated, or I don't know if you could, if love harder or have a greater, you know, just feeling of appreciation. So I think my whole appreciation for life, my appreciation for respect of others, because what I did what came out of that for me was that I didn't do and didn't serve so that people can think exactly like me. What I served and did those things is so people can think, and people can have their own freedom of expression, and people can have their own right to, because I was at a place that they didn't have rights. I was at a place that was horrible in some aspects of what we had to endure. And my appreciation for liberty became greater. And liberty means liberty for people that disagree with you. And so that came out of that. I think, you know, when I look at what I was able to talk to folks about, was what I think the greater, beside bigger than me, was unity. Mm-hmm. That came out of it.
I know you emphasized that today in your talk, and I thought it was beautiful. Can you tell us some of those things you talked about?
Well, you know what? It in our time as a nation, some of the greatest successes that we've had. I mean, we can go back to things that people don't want to talk about. Civil War. Some of the greatest successes that we've had have come out of hardship and has come out of turmoil. When you look at the Depression, the Great Depression, all of these things have created greater successes. And one of the things that I really resonated with me was one of the most, I said in my speech, one of the most significant things that stands out to me from 9/11 attack is our country's unity. The United States of America came together. It started with the first responders, firefighters, law enforcement, rushing to help. And we supported them, unity. And so I've got a kind of a list of things that I think speaks to unity that came out of 9/11.
Yeah, that's, I felt compelled on Facebook, and I don't normally do this. I don't like to put personal stuff up on Facebook. But for some reason, I felt a little compelled yesterday morning to put something up for 9/11. And that I actually found I had things, it's not, I'm leery of saying this because I don't want to say that I'm thankful for anything out of 9/11. But let me say this. I served over there. I had a combat action badge, received the Bronze Star. And there's no way on earth I would have been appointed as a Superior Court judge without my military record. I was coming out of the public defender's office. I put my application in 2007, and I was registered a Democrat back then. I'm independent now, but Democrat public defender, and the legislature wasn't so skewed towards Democrats back then. And basically, today, I'm a 64-year-old white guy. I'm not the kind of guy that they're, like, jumping hoops to appoint. And, but Governor Schwarzenegger loved the military. And he, I was told this, he appointed me because of my military record. That's what the appointment secretary said. And I ended up, as a result of that, being appointed as a Veterans Court judge, which... When I'll look over my life, if I was sitting on my deathbed and they say, we'll give you 5 minutes to tell us the best thing, best job you ever had, I would say, you know, I don't need 5 minutes. I can tell you right now. It's working as a Veterans Court judge, helping my brother and sister, veterans, to heal. You know, I got the greatest job ever. I had a chance to see those things you're talking about, the unity and how it brought people together. And I also met my wife. I will say 9/11, I'm not going to get into these details. It probably did a job on my first marriage. I was never home, but I had the opportunity to meet the love of my life, Kim Kessler Garrison.
All right.
And she now goes by Johnson, but, and we got married in 2015, August 5th, 2015. It's strange. I mean, some good things for me came out of it. This job, a new life, and what else? It actually showed me some things. You know, I had always been worried that I would go to a combat zone and I'd be a coward. That was actually, and I sure. think that's a very common
yes.
sentiment, particularly among men. And I learned something. I'm not a coward.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to be charging a machine gun up on a hill, but I was willing to do what needed to be done, even, no matter how dangerous, if it was the mission. And I know you can say that, too. You did two tours over there.
Sure. Well, one of the key things that I spoke to before is out of adversity. If we look at it, and I'm just going to jump real quick to another quick topic. If we look at COVID, if you look at the businesses that were started at home, our government legislature started to do stuff at home. All of these kinds of things were all done because things were shut down. And so that was could have been a considered next, but they were businesses that were started. They were finances. People became creative. So just that little point. But now I'll go back to 9/11. But when we talk about that war and that time period, the exact same thing for me, my life was changed and I did some things that I would have never gotten the opportunity to. And I remember as a veteran and as a service member, you only train for one thing, war. You got French benefits. You got going to school and VA benefits. But the only reason why we have a military, bar none, and I would argue with this general to the hill or anybody, that it's only one thing, war.
You're right. You're right. The mission, for instance, of the Army,
yes,
to fight and win the nation's wars. That's it.
And so so we train for that. And so you had a valid notion that, hey, how will I act in war? I remember going over to in Iraq and being in a shelling zone where they were shelling and doing these kinds of things. And it was individuals kind of running around like, what are we going to do? So you're going to do your job. You're going to do what you're trained to do. And so you never know. I mean, you got the toughest guy, had some of the toughest guys that while we were preparing to be deployed would sing and do these rah-rah songs. But when they got over there, yeah, I seen difference. So that was a valid piece. You really don't know. You don't know your own grit until you get in the, yeah, the fight. So very, very, very valid. But I would say that the greatest changes for me and that would have never happened for me if it wasn't for 9/11. I remember, I think my background and coming back and being a combat vet, I wasn't a sergeant major then. I got promoted. You know, I had those kinds of things on my record. I got a chance to experience Sergeant Major's Academy, and as I moved to my duty station and go to Aerosol School. So there was some great things that came out, and receive a master's and do some things that was really afforded to me after 9/11.
Using your post 9/11 GI Bill, I
absolutely
believe.
Absolutely.
Okay.
And that was a combat.
I was a judge who was, when did I start? I would have been 58 when I started program, but I got a master's in creative writing. In fact, I'm an author too, and having some success. That's something I'm working on. But I got a master's in fine arts and creative writing from the University of California, Riverside. Great program. Mm-hmm. And now, I mean, it's funny how you can reminisce and you can think how horrible everything was, but you know, some good things come.
Well,
out of strange way, but I think it are the good things coming, or we're making them come. I don't know.
Well, here's the thing. I think that we have good things all around us. We just have to stop. We have to ask the question. I mean, I think it's very easy to find the bad things. Always, it always has been. It's always very easy to find the challenges. I think that the good things are around us. Some things are, you know, tragic. I don't take away that fact that things are tragic. You know, if you depending on where you line up, faith or not, but you know, when somebody passes away, there's somebody born. So, you know, I think that that you really has to deal with what you want to believe and how you desire to believe. If you want to believe that there's always a problem, there will always be a problem.
It's easy to be a cynic. You can always point stuff out that you think is wrong.
Sure.
Now, Greg, let me ask this, because I notice you do a lot of giving back to the community. I come out there, you're having a lunch for people who are living on the streets. You seem to be constantly giving back. I know up in San Bernardino, which is a rough town, and they got a massive homeless population, and you're up there on the streets, but you're not like some guy sitting back in a building out in Los Angeles talking about how to solve problems. You're down on the ground with these folks, and some of them probably aren't the most pleasant. They're probably using drugs, and a lot of them are mentally ill. Why do you do that? So important.
I think, you know, and thanks for recognizing. I really think that a lot of the challenges that we have can't always and won't be solved from sitting in a building or sitting in an office. I think that in order to solve a lot of our problems, we have to have boots on the ground. And I know that a lot of those folks who are making decisions about financing, making decisions about the homeless, I'm not saying that everyone needs to come down to a San Bernardino place and walk around, and then they can come back after they've walked around and have a profound knowledge of how to help the homeless or how to help those in need or how to help veterans in transition. But what I do think is I think they should have a strong familiarity and touch bases with folks who are walking around, because we know that some of the biggest challenges that we have not been solved by dollars and cents, and have not been solved by those strategic boardroom meetings. And so we can throw millions and millions and even billions of dollars at things, and then you come out and you look at and the problems increase. So I think that there is something really said for me and for individuals like me to be boots on the ground, touch the ground, and maybe be able to walk back into the boardroom.
You know, I noticed when we both talked today, you had your message of unity for the members there. I hope I didn't come off like I was griping a little too much, but I did actually have a message, and mm-hmm. I know it would be a receptive one in that office, in that audience. But I have a real problem with people tearing down this country. I think one of the biggest challenges to our democracy now is not coming from like radical extremists or domestic terrorism. I think it's coming from internally, with a lot of people who want to be claim that somehow the United States of America, which, let's face it, is the greatest country that's ever existed on this planet, is somehow illegitimate, it's stolen land. And I'm not sure the end game of these people, but it almost looks like all they want to do is tear this great nation down. Do we have problems? Absolutely. But I will tell you, I'll trust that group today at the VFW to fix them a lot quicker than I will a bunch of college kids who's never gotten out, or some Hollywood actress who's living in a $160 million mansion lamenting how oppressed she is. I think we need to come together. I think, and you know, I talked to those people about a time in Sadr City. It was on the east side of Baghdad, a big slum, and how I saw running down the middle of the street was, there were no sewage system. Running down the middle of the street was a river, and it was basically urine, and mm-hmm. with enough, had to have enough urine to keep the feces going down, and kids are playing in this stuff. And I guess I'd like to take some of these Americans who seem to think that are living in million-dollar homes and they're lamenting how sad their lives are. I'd like them to go over and spend a little time and just to see that even. I think it's sad. I think I know there's people like you and me. We'll bust our ass to fix problems of all our brothers and sisters. I don't give a crap what race, gender, sex, all the categories. You know, we all get the same goal, but I don't understand how some of these people, they just seem like they just want to tear everything down.
Well, I think you have a valid point, and that really resonated with the folks out there.
I know what.
But, and so my thought is that in some of those environments and some of those folks that are speaking, not that they don't have a point. However, you know, the frame of reference that they have in terms of us visiting other places and seeing what, oh my gosh, when we walk away. I remember first leaving Kuwait and going into Baghdad. And seeing, because I, at one point, to be honest, I kind of was thinking like, why am I there? You know, I knew I was sin. I was like, hey, I'm, I'm a black man from this city here, and then what am I doing here? But once I crossed, and you know, and a faith based guy, and then once I crossed the line, and I seen these kids with no shoes on, I seen these kids rattled and tattered, and then what I did, I seen that as a kid that potentially on our streets. That's then yeah, I knew.
I know they look like the
yeah,
kids
they could, here.
Could
be anywhere. I mean, if you see in a and so when I did that, I realized why I was there, and being my faith or whatever, I said, okay, maybe it's to bring this in. But I think that a lot of folks talk from a perspective of unfamiliarity, a perspective of not seeing anything else, a perspective of not being experienced with anything else. So you can look at what media tells you is incorrect. I know that there's a lot of injustices. Believe me, I know. But I still realize I'd have my injustices here than over there anytime. I think it goes to perspective, and it goes to, you can have a person who wants to rant and rave about a specific issues, but what are you doing besides a ranting and raving?
What are you doing to fix it?
Right.
Yes. You get out there. You're going to get people who,
you know,
if you're of honest heart and you really want to do it, you'll get people who don't even agree with a lot of your world views helping you.
Yes.
I'd love to.
And that's the whole thing. But to be a Facebook or a Twitter or all of those leader quote
or warrior
or warrior or a guru
Twitter.
That's not helpful. That doesn't
no.
you think that you're sitting here and you're championing for something, but you're really not.
Yeah.
If you don't match that up with boots on the ground and being out there, and it's not always even a money thing, because if you throw money out there, we know that is not always the piece.
The truth. And, you know, it's funny how I kind of brought that up, but your unity message, I think, is something that applies now, then, everywhere.
Let me just run through the things that I was able to tell the folks about unity. I said, we supported the firemen and law enforcement rushing to help. We supported them, unity. Goodwill, civilians, Good Samaritans, we supported them. These are all the things that happened after 9/11. I said the military members being shipped to the Middle East, we supported them. All across this great nation came together to support others. We supported them. The military has been for the most part, an area that most of the country can support, unity. So when we had the biggest amount of crises, we came together in unity. And I think that looking at that, can I share some of the things that I think that the 9/11 folks would consider?
Absolutely, Greg.
So one of the things that I said, is I believe that the people who died during 9/11 would most want us to do is never forget them. Not in fear or in sorrow, but in the best life. Don't fight so much about the small issues so that they become big issues, and then you forget what that small issue was. Look for the smallest agreement in conflicts. That's a start. If you can't come to an agreement, then come to an understanding. Live life as if you appreciated the gift that it is. Unity.
Well, tell you what, you're going to get another one of these, but I get okay.
Well, thank you for
that's beautiful. Greg, now I'm also hearing that perhaps you've got some good news
for
the Reaching New Heights Foundation. Go ahead.
I'm going to share partial, and we'll have other segments. But Reaching New Heights Foundation, as I shared earlier, was founded in 2014, and it was founded after me being a wounded warrior, and what that entailed is, and what my being a wounded warrior was not. During the conflict, it was just the result of just the wear and tear on my body. I ended up having a hip surgery and a shoulder surgery. And at that particular point, I remember the doctor, and I think it was a major, said that once you do this hip surgery, if you still have pain, then you're going to have a total hip replacement. And I looked at him And I said, I'm done. He said, sorry, Mary, what do you mean? I said, I'm done. I'm going to the house. And so we did the surgery. At that point, prior to the surgery, I knew that I was going to be retiring. So they put me in what they call a wounded warrior battalion. Or they call it a warrior battalion. And that's where I seen all kinds of other soldiers that were being transitioned out of the Army. I seen guys who had severe cognitive issues. I've seen guys with limbs missing. I've seen folks in wheelchairs. And I spent 2 years with them, and I knew that I had been fortunate to receive rank and to get training, and I knew that they were going to need help. And so we started Reaching New Heights nonprofit when I got back to California. We have been pursuing grants and we've been pursuing areas, but our foundation has been really kept alive by you, some of you all listeners, by your donations and about our board of supervisors who've donated in a real amazing group fund that was headed up by Carol Myers, who would donate on a regular basis to our organization. But we've always had to really, kind of work for, maybe $1,000 here, $100 here. But we have just secured a major grant to help veterans in transition. These are veterans who were formerly in the justice system and they're transitioning out of the justice system. And we're so excited about it. We will have another podcast. I know Mark has been really, really looking to say, hey, we got to tell them the great news. But we've got some great news, and that will be a future podcast, and we'll be able to kind of share what this mission will be and what kind of awesome funding that we were able to secure.
Greg, this has got to be a first.
Double.
Greg. Yeah, you got
double clap.
Yeah, two claps. Well, I'll be honest with you. I was too hesitant to use the clap for a while because I thought it sounded kind of tacky, but.
Oh, I love it.
Yeah, it is kind of cool. Well, Greg, any final words you'd like to get out there about? Somebody's kind of sitting there thinking today. We've got a veteran. He's sitting there thinking he lost a lot of buddies, perhaps in the years after 9/11. Anybody who's kind of lamenting this day, anything you'd like to say?
Well, one of the things that I would say to the ones who are listening to this and you know of someone, don't stop. Continue to talk to them. Continue to reach out to them. Don't give up on them. Don't say, hey, I've done all that I can do. As long as you have contact with them, continue to ask the questions, continue to tell them to seek help. So don't stop. That's what I would tell someone who knows of someone who's in a challenging point in their life and they may not be doing the best, but just continue. If they listen to you, and even if they don't, continue. What I would say to the individual who is going through right now, and they're sitting here thinking that nobody cares, and that I'm by myself. You don't know exactly what I've experienced. You could not know. And what I would tell you, that's not true. We absolutely know. Your experience may be different, but it's like the rest of us. We are a band of brothers and sisters. Know that we care. Know that we can help and reach out. If you're contemplating, something catastrophic or contemplating that, doing things that would be reckless in your life, know that we care. We are here. I will give you my number. I'm Sergeant Major Gregory Coker, or Greg. I'm at Reaching New Heights Foundation. And I'll give you my phone number very slowly here. 909-518-4951. Reach out. That's the best thing you could do, even if you don't know what to do. Just reach out. That's my best advice I can give.
Hey, let me just say one thing. Greg's a good friend. I'm one of those guys who really doesn't. I have a lot of people I like, but I don't have many close friends. He's one
Thank
of them. And he's also one of the finest humans you're ever going to meet. So I'd like to, first off, thank Greg. Thank you very much for
Welcome.
Joining me in this. This was his idea, and I think it was a great one. let me thank our listeners out there. Contact me, mejohnsonauthor@gmail.com. That's mejohnsonauthor @gmail.com. It'll be in the show notes as well as my website address. You can get a hold of me there. If you got any criticisms, critiques, questions, you please get in touch with me. We're here to help, and God bless.
God bless.